I will die. You will die. We will all die, and the universe will carry on without care. All that we have is that shout into the wind, how we live, how we go, and how we stand before we fall.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast that rates and reviews the internet's most beloved, most recommended books. And we tell you if you're a busy person, if it's really worth it or not. I'm Casey.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Caitlin. And this is where we say pause. And if you haven't read Red Rising, that we did a couple weeks ago by Pierce Brown, go read that or listen to that episode and come back, because today we are talking about the second book in that trilogy. It's called Golden Sun. And the series is taking the internet by storm right now, despite it being older. It is all the rage. Someone texted me 20 minutes ago telling me they finished this book. I was like, well, we're about to record that episode. So This one, we pick back up with Darrow, and he has infiltrated the world of the Golds in the society's hierarchy. And now he's gone from the Institute and murdering other students to the Academy and guiding star fleets and waging wars. And it's a very different feel from the first book, because You are back to like future tech, and but a lot of same characters are around, but they won't be around long.
Yikes.
Anyway, this one's a lot about, now he's done what he's supposed to do, and he's kind of trying to decide if he should like actually be friends with some of these people or not. And when you trust people, will they let you down?
True. And lots of people do, and lots of people don't.
So anybody who doesn't let you down is probably dead.
Yeah. Do you guys have reviews?
Yeah, I do. I have a 1-star review from Goodreads that I felt to my core a bit. I finished this, and guess what I get afterwards? Depression.
It's a good one. Okay, I'll go next. I have 2 very similar 1-star reviews. This one, 1-star, says, this book does not deserve to win the 2015 Goodreads Choice Awards. A also throwback. But it might make a nice coaster for my drink. And then the second one says, well, I take back what I said about Red Rising.
Oh, this book made them reevaluate the whole ass first book.
Yeah, they were like, never mind.
I also have 2. The first one is a 5-star, and it says in all caps, help, I'm scared. And then
it's a good summary, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
4-stars. It says, I have determined that I am not the audience for this series because I am not a straight man. However, that being said, this book was good. It was the definition of OMG, the girlies are fighting and you can't look away. I'm invested in the politics and the drama because everyone is so messy. And I like that. Now I will be continuing the series because he left us on a cheeky cliffhanger. And that's all I need to add to the next. To add the next one to Libby.
Period. This book is definitely messy. Mm-hmm. Another good adjective. Oh,
messy. Every time you can think, it gets more messy.
It gets messy.
Clear messy. Until the last page.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the overall Goodreads rating for the book is 4.5 out of 5. The Fable rating also 4.5 out of 5. And then the Storygraph rating 4.4 out of 5. So very highly reviewed. What'd you guys think of the sequel? Red Rising was like our book of the year, so highly anticipated.
Hey, let's go first.
Should I start? get ready for me to be murdered, guys. I gave it 5 stars. It was probably a 4-star read for me, like the whole time. The ending just really, I liked the craziness at the end and everything it's setting up for book 3. So that pushed me to, I just went ahead and gave it 5 stars because I'm like, you know what? Nothing else has had me gag the way this book has in a very long time. I genuinely think I only predicted like one thing they would happen and it was a betrayal, but that's because they were Easter eggs the whole time. Everyone else, I was like, oh, shoot. You know, kept me on my toes. It was a little slower just because it's a lot of like war, but there are issues that they're going to talk about. I just tried to ignore them because it's written by a man and I just have to understand that.
See, I choose not to ignore that.
Don't have to understand it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will give Pierce Brown credit. It is a plot so complex that I have not seen a book or a series so complex in a very long while. Like this is very well thought out, very well put together. The world building's phenomenal. I'm giving it 4 stars, though, because I have to dock a star for the treatment of women in this book and how female characters are portrayed, because the first book I could excuse some of it because there were still some strong female characters that were not being placed secondary to men. In this book, I felt like the female characters were being put in second place to men, and it was well thought about and talked about in the book. And there could have been more, I don't know, writing development depth to these female characters. So I could excuse it in the first one. The second one, I can no longer excuse it. So it goes down from a 5 to a 4 for me.
Let me guess, you guys both don't like Victra, who I think is funny.
I loved Victra.
I like her, yeah.
But it totally degrades herself from the whole book to be a groupie, which is one of my core issues.
No. I think she's up to something.
Well, we'll talk about that later. I don't want to spoil anything. But yeah, I actually have a very similar view to you, Catherine. To me, when we all talked about this in book one, there are a few moments in book one where it's like, yeah, this was written by a man. But I felt like my critiques were small enough and the book was good enough that I still felt it was a 5-star read. For me in this book, like, if you're not going to write good female characters, then everything else about it had better be perfect. And this book to me was like even worse treatment of female characters and the book was less good. And so now I'm mad. Like, if you want to get away with that, your shit has to be tight. And I thought there were points in this book that were too long. There was too much extra fat. Not everything was as tight and meaningful as in Red Rising. And there were some scenes with women, and there's really only 2 real female characters in the book. But there were some points that, like, really made me mad. Specifically, we'll get into it later. I feel like this book really minimizes sexual violence and takes a very patriarchal view towards sexual violence to the degree that I'm, like, honestly, it made me, like, really mad. And it got really, like, bothered me. So, yeah, I still thought it was a good book. I just think the era in which I forgive books for sexism is over. And so I will probably read the next book. If I don't feel better about the next book, then I'm just done with the series. But
well, that's good because the next book is the end of the trilogy.
There's more, though. I think there's 6 or 7 now.
Yeah, but not the like main trilogy. I think they're all like side quests.
Well, he did good, I guess, making book one great and book two fine, because I'll read the third before.
What's your star rating?
Oh, I think I said it, 3.5.
Okay.
So, yeah, 3.5.
Now, some people, I will say, reading reviews online, some people think book two is better than book one.
Which is crazy to me.
No.
And I have heard that multiple times from people.
Yeah. I disagree with that.
I liked book one better, but I could see how maybe people who are more into like the space side of things would like book two better.
Like Star Wars fans?
Space? I don't know. Star Wars fans are weird. Sorry.
Yeah, actually,
I don't know how to classify them. Are they space people or are they just Star Wars people?
I don't know.
Nerds?
Well, we're nerds too.
But I mean, yes, but...
the world is bigger in book two, which I think I'm assuming is part of why people like it more, because it's not so focused on like a very narrow experience. You get a lot more about the broader society and interact with a much broader scope of characters. But yeah, let's get into our discussion questions. Okay. So is the book more plot or character driven?
Oh, it's plot.
This one's all plot, baby.
All yeah. plot.
The last one had a lot more character.
This is yeah. plot.
He's still like doing stuff, making decisions, trying to figure himself out, but
he is very much beholden to the plot.
He gets yeah. no choices that change a lot.
Yeah. Agree. Second question, obvious. Would you read other books by the author? We're all continuing the series, so there you go. I'm assuming that we're all still feeling like we'll read book three.
Yeah. I feel like I have to.
Not cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Even if you hated the book, you'd have to keep reading.
Yeah, I'm actually really interested how he's going to pull this all off in three books, because I feel like book two, we're not at a position where I understand how he's going to pull it off in three books. How was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you guys to read?
It's hard for me to answer that question only because I didn't want to read this book a bit because I work in news. Yeah. News has been a little crazy. So I've needed some like light and airy rom-coms in order to keep my reading going. So I didn't really want to pick up this book, but once I like sat down and read it, I read it in like two sittings basically.
Wow.
I read this, I don't know, a couple of sittings off and on. I don't remember. It took me like a week to read. There were times that I was like, wow, this is just a lot of spaceship stuff. It was never dull enough, though, that I wanted to give up or anything. And it honestly, like, I kept having new questions, so I kept having to read. So the pacing was fine, but not as good as the first book.
Yeah, I think the pacing is really part of why it's probably, you know, my issues with the portrayal of female characters, but B, I just did not love the pacing of this one. Granted, I'm trying to cut it a little bit of slack because I listened to this on audiobook with my dad while we were driving across the country.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, and so, which it did, it took us almost exactly from the time we started to the time we finished to read it. We didn't listen to the book nonstop because it's just too heavy for that. But I think the audiobook is fine. The actor is good. I think part of the reason it hurt my experience, though, is the sort of like alpha male bullshit of it all comes through a lot more on the audiobook. Because you're actually listening to Darrow be like, I will rise again. And you're kind of like, oh, shut the fuck up. And so I personally would not recommend the audiobook. I think that is part of why this book annoyed me so much. But anyway, there were parts that did honestly bore me. There were parts where I was like, okay, like, let's wrap it up. I know there's tension here. I know there's alliances you're trying to build, but I need this to be like on, you know, 1.5 speed. Like, I'm not enjoying it on regular speed. So, and I also thought the ending stretched on really long. There's
who listens to audiobooks on regular speed?
Yeah.
Well, my dad.
Actually, I do for Dungeon Crawler Carl, but that's beside the point. That one's funny.
Yeah, there just were parts where I was like, this is just not going fast enough. Like, I'm not really interested in this and I'd like to fast forward. And then the ending stretched on really long for me. There are still parts of the book that are super interesting where the book really shines, but I just felt like those moments were more spaced out and I found myself not enjoying all the downtime in between.
I agree. Sure.
So would you watch a movie or TV show of this book?
I mean, yeah, I think the series in itself is interesting. I'd be curious to see it adapted by like I don't know, like a female director, or yeah, like have more female influence in the like a live action version of this in like TV show form, because I think then you can get more nuance into the female characters, because you can't really do first person narrative as much as a TV show. It's just not very possible. Like, you're mm-hmm. gonna have a broader viewpoint, which I think will actually allow it to be more deep if you find the right writer and find the right director to do it.
Okay, here's the thing. I agree. I want to watch this. This is not a spoiler. I think Victoria, not Victra, Victoria, aka Mustang, is secretly, this is my prediction, I know nothing about what happens in the rest of the series, I think she's going to be the ultimate savior of the books, not Darrow.
Well, I mean, yeah.
That's my prediction. So I think the girlies will redeem themselves. I could be wrong. That's just my
You can't say guess. The girlies. You have to say the girly. There's only one.
Yeah.
The girly will take down all of those stupid men and single-handedly save the universe, is my thought.
That is actually the... I was going to say this later in the
spoilers. And that's why I just don't care that much right now what's happening.
Yeah. That, I was going to say that in the spoiler section, actually, that that's the one thing that keeps me reading this book, actually, is that I overall have a lot of critiques of the way female characters are portrayed, but Mustang is always right. And every time Darrow doesn't listen to Mustang, he actually just like bites him in the ass so hard. And so...
Well, and I don't think it's a spoiler, because I think you get that vibe from the first book, too.
Yeah, she's the right. genius of the group.
Like, she's really the reason that he had that kind of meteoric rise. So, yeah, I don't disagree. And that is one of the only reasons why I'm still holding on. Okay, well, that brings us to our spoiler section and also our Busy Girl rating. Ultimately... I think this book is longer in page count than the first one.
I think so.
What does that do to y'all's Busy Girl rating?
Nothing.
Nothing? Yeah, you're a 5 still?
I'll give it like a 4, honestly, just because I thought it was less interesting than the first book, though I had no issues with it. It's like a totally different book with the same characters. Like, they're not the same, and I don't think as many people overall will enjoy this one, because it's more of a space opera than a Game of Thrones.
Space opera is a good word. I think that's the right comparison for it. Yeah, I do think that's also part of my issue with it, is the vibe shift is so extreme. It's a little jarring when you first pick this one up, which I would honestly compare it to Game of Thrones, because I think Game of Thrones has some of those moments too, because the beginning books are about her figuring out who she is. And then after that, you have to actually launch a revolution, and it's really hard to launch a revolution.
Game of Thrones.
What did I say?
You said Game
Throne of Glass. Sorry.
Throne of Glass. There are a lot of characters. I don't know which one of them's doing that.
Sorry, I meant Throne of Glass, where the earlier books with Aelin is more about her like self-discovery and getting her crew together, but then she has to actually launch revolution, and that's really hard and much different than what she's doing in the first books. And this book is that on an accelerated timeline, and so you're watching him try to actually take the next step, and it's really hard and confusing. And to the book's credit, he fails a bunch of times. And
yes. Yeah.
So I think my honest truth is this is a Busy Girls 3 for me. I still think it's a good book. I still think it's worth reading the series, but it suffers in comparison to the first book. It's impossible to not compare it to the first book. And I liked the first book so much more that I probably would have rated this higher if I had read it first, but I didn't. And so I'm just like, I don't know. It was a little bit disappointing for me as a follow-up to the first one. So it's a 3. It was too long. That's okay. It.
Yeah, I could see that. I think I'm going to do kind of like a split Busy Girl rating, because if you think of it as one solo book, it's a Busy Girls 3. But if you think of it as part of a series, if you liked book one, you're going to read book two, you're going to finish it, and then you're going to go to book three, because you just can't not, because it's just like such a crazy world and you just want to see how it ends. So in all honesty, if you've already read the first book and you loved it, you're going to enjoy the second book in some way, shape or form. So it's Busy Girls 4 in that sense. But if you take it as a standalone book, it's closer to a 3 just because of the length. And there are boring moments in it for sure, where you're just like, Darrow, get your head out of your fucking ass. Yeah.
I do. OK, never mind. We'll get into this. It is time anyway.
Rub our little paws together.
It is time for the spoiler section. So if you have not read this book, we are about to spoil a lot. A lot happens, despite us saying there were some lulls in the pacing. Half the characters die, so don't spoil which ones they are. Anyway, I don't even remember why I was excited to talk about the spoilers. I got distracted. Well, something we were already talking about. Did the sequel live up to the first book? And I think for some people, yes. But it sounds like for all of us, no, right?
I think it does and it doesn't for me.
And like we said, too, they're totally different books.
Yeah. Right. There are still things about this book that really impressed me. I was ultimately disappointed, but not in every way. Like, I still thought there was a lot of twists and turns. There was a lot of political intrigue. The characters are very hard to predict, and like the world is very complicated. So those things that made me interested in the series in the first place were still there. It's just like, I don't know, the experience wasn't as good. I didn't think it was as organized as well, brought together as a whole package as well as the first book was. And like, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but for me, if I don't like the portrayal of female characters, I just feel like, well, why read the book? Like, we're at the point in, you know, thankfully, in literature where we have great books that have great portrayals of female characters. Like, even Game of Thrones, for all of its problematic incest and sexual assault, has like handfuls and handfuls of certified bad bitches. So like, why would I read this like two-dimensional less portrayal of women? There's three girls in the whole book that matter, and two of them are like basically shit on constantly and are stupid. And the other one is just this idealized fantasy. And so I just kind of feel like skip, flop. Like, I don't have to read it, so I won't.
Yeah, I think it does live up in the sense of like, when you think of it as a continuation of the series, it very much so hits on all the points you want to hit on. And it leaves you on the edge of your seat basically the entire time, trying to get you to the conclusion, and then you think it's going to conclude and then it doesn't actually conclude. It just kicks off again,
just keeps going.
Like, I really thought that there was going to be a conclusion and then like a falling action, like just like yeah, there was no conclusion at all. But at the same time, the first book is just so good, and the war games and the Institute itself, and when you're in the Institute and you're living that day to day, it is so fascinating, to that when you get into this book and you're like 3 years in the future at the Academy, and then like the fallout of everything, it isn't as like fast paced and as interesting, because like, you're not in like a war games against a bunch of people, you're at war, and war is a lot more boring things than you think it is.
Yeah,
I think some of it for me is the first book has so much more moral quandary and so much deep thought about decisions and right and wrong and who should be on top. And in the second book, Darrow largely has to just set those aside for his mission. He's like, do I want to be human or do I want to bring about the revolution? And that's the big thing here. And he wants to bring about the revolution. So a lot of it he just sets aside. So you don't like Darrow as much in this book because he is doing bad things for an end goal. in a sacrificial way. What I was going to say that I remembered when I got excited about the spoiler alert section is that I excuse some of that because Pierce Brown actually does frequently remind us that Darrow is a kid. They are all kids playing with spaceships. Darrow says that, like, I'm too young to make these decisions, do these things. And I think that adds some complication. He's just a kid who's been tasked with starting a revolution with a lot more agency that Katniss ever had, you know? Yeah.
A lot more consequences.
Liked the sociology side of the first book so much more. And I did like that stuff where we missed that. And that's what made me love the first book.
Because the first book was playing the war games and it was the sociology of like how humanity works when you're put into these like situations of life or death, survival of the fittest. This one is like, you're not playing war anymore. You are at war. And the politics of families are a whole thing. The politics of an emperor.
Right. You're not stabbing one fellow student. You're blowing up a spaceship of 1,000 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. I think who Darrow is as a human in this book is very interesting because I think part of the reason the book is the way it is and the reason Darrow is not as likable in this book is also I do feel like he's really lost himself and he ends up going back to the Red Planet and that kind of grounds him again, or not to the Red Planet. He goes to Mars and then goes to like the Red Society. Mm-hmm. And so I think that moment in the book is there because he needed to be regrounded. Like he needed to remember again why he was even doing all of this in the first place, because I do feel like he was kind of lost in the game of it all. Like he was playing so hard and trying so hard to end up on top that I think he had lost sight a little bit of what he was actually trying to win and the whole purpose of it all.
Yeah, he kind of forgot until he started losing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then he wasn't on top all of a sudden, which is also part of like some of the male dominance ick of it all is that he sort of loses himself because he, I think, does start to see himself as a god. He sees himself as smarter and more capable than everyone else in the room. And it makes him really fucking insufferable at some parts. Especially when you know that like Mustang is the real genius behind it all. And so I think to the book's credit, the book does humble him. But he is still the revolution bringer. And so he still has to have this whole journey. And I think part of the reason I didn't like the book as much is because he reaches this height of sort of insufferability and like borderline delusional self-confidence. He hits a hard valley where he's like really humbled. He climbs back to the top again. And then he kind of doesn't learn his lesson. The end of the book is him basically being humbled as fuck again. And it's sort of just like, I think as a woman reading this book, I didn't like it as much because the delusion came from that like male feeling of invincibility that I just don't think women have. Where it's like, why do you think that everyone just wants to follow you and kiss the ground you walk on? And that why do you think you're smarter and more capable than everyone else? Like,
yeah. I think, though, that's part of being a gold, because you see the women do that, too.
Yeah.
But good leaders,
they're just not in their head.
Mustang understand how to utilize other people and value what other people bring to the table. And I think Darrow is still trying to do that. But I think
she still protects her family above all else.
Well, that's, you know, what happens at the end of the book is really her conflict, an internal conflict, is then she has to reckon with how much does she actually believe in her ideals and is she willing to sacrifice her family for them? And we don't know if she will. I think we all suspect that she will, but, you know.
I mean, I think I'll give Pierce Brown credit because I think he did that for a reason. He made Darrow's fatal flaw hubris. He made his fatal flaw, like, because he came from nothing and was put into a place of everything, he could get blinded by the power, blinded by the...
Actually, here's where... Now I'm going to play devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. I'll argue he had that the whole time, because when he was a Helldiver, he was insufferable.
He was insufferable, yes.
He was invincible and insufferable. And all they did was give him means to do that on a bigger scale.
So yeah, it's his fatal. Yeah. I think Pierce Brown does that really well, where I would say, like, I think that was intentional. I don't think that was just Pierce Brown being a man writing a man. I think this was a very intentional thing with Darrow specifically. I will say it's so funny to me because Mustang tells him outright, I am the genius in this room. I am a genius. Do not devalue me. And he devalues her in the sense of he only sees her as like a love interest or a person he can love or a, yeah, it's just, I mean, it's putting her in the box of the Bechdel test where it's just like, she's always
ultimately his sidekick.
Yeah. She's a sidekick. She's put into a category just with a man. She, and like, even her father does it to her where she's just, she sees their connection and is just like,
I don't know. I think he's still, he sees her working. Like, none of the stuff he accomplished in this book would be possible without her. He sees that she's doing that. I think he just still is so untrusting of her because of who her family is that he doesn't allow himself to, like, fully appreciate that. Like, he acknowledges, without Mustang, I'd be screwed. But it's not until the end that he really decides to actually trust her, you know, and you see how trust benefits him in Sevro. You see how no trust hurts him and Roke. And so he decides, I need to trust this person because she is a game changer, both in the grand scheme of things and in my personal life. So I would argue he sees her value. He just doesn't trust her.
I think that's true. But I think part of why it bothers me is I do feel like he's very much a user.
Yes. Because he's told to be, and he's like, my end goal is revolution. I've started to care for these people, but I have to forget that.
Right. But I think when we read books like this that are written by women from the female perspective, there's a lot more time spent on how that is an emotional experience. About, and Darrow has emotions in this book. It's not like emotions aren't in this book at all. But I think the part that Darrow consistently misses, which is why he still really struggles as a leader, is that he's incapable of understanding how his actions and the way he uses people impact them as emotional beings. And so he doesn't understand why his using Mustang when it's convenient and then disappearing to an academy for months and not speaking to her impacts her and makes her mad. Like, it actually shocks to him that she's not waiting around for him at the end of it, which is so stupid. And then he feels like he can just reach out to Sevro and get Sevro's help whenever he needs it. And then Roke is really the only one who just like doesn't tolerate it. And Mustang doesn't tolerate it either, even though Darrow wins her back in the end. But it's kind of like, yeah, because you don't actually really invest in these people as people. You only utilize them when you need them. And I get why he does that, because he's ultimately a red trying to disable gold society. But it's also like frustrating. So it's like, why can't you see that you need to consider them as people in order to actually like have alliances that mean something?
I will say, in the case of Roke, I think he was right not to trust him, not just because of the ending, but I think Roke truly believes in gold superiority and truly believes in the society. So if he had ever told Roke even earlier that he was a red, the reaction would be the exact same. Like, I don't think that would have changed, because I think Roke truly believes in the propaganda he's been told.
And he likes
it. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you too. But what I'm saying is that it's not just about trust. It's about him considering the emotions and the actual humanhood of those around him and how.
Yes. I do think that's where it comes back in when I say it acknowledges that he is a kid. What 23-year-old boy? He's not even 23, I guess. I don't know how old he is. 22? He's like 20. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's 22.
What? 22? Think about it. This is essentially a 22-year-old frat boy. He has no idea what the feelings of others are.
You're not wrong.
I mean, but he's writing a realistic 20-something hero, unlike, you know, most young heroes we see who are very self-actualized.
No, it's true. It just also makes him insufferable. Like,
I'm not arguing that part.
And it's like, and I'm not opposed to like struggling with the character, because there are moments when I've hated Aelin and when she needs to grow. Like, you know, this is a feature of, I think, all good series, that you start with a child and you end with an adult, and that has to mean something. But you do still kind of hate Darrow.
And I think you're sort of supposed to.
Mm-hmm. I hope so. I hope so. Sometimes I worry about some of the comments I see from men reading this book. I'm like, men never realize when they're supposed to not be with a character.
Well, and, you know, we haven't finished the series, but Pierce Brown's followers call themselves the Howlers. they don't call themselves, like, I don't know, Reds or something. They're there for Severo, man. They ride or die for Severo. So
I do best character.
I ride or die for Severo.
Yes, we all do. Yeah. So I think that's kind of the point, is like, you put in this person who's supposed to be really better morally than the Golds, and realize in the scheme of it, they're actually Golds who are very morally upright. They're just oppressed like the others.
Well, and it's also a degree of being raised right, where his father definitely taught him in the right way.
Crazy plot twist for Severo.
Yes, that is a crazy plot twist for Severo. I was not expecting that.
Wait, did you guys see it coming?
No.
I didn't either. I did not see it coming.
I will say, I saw him being Aries coming.
I didn't even see that. I'm like, he's the freaking Aries Proctor, and I still didn't.
Yes. So, yeah, I was like, he's the Mars Proctor. Mars is Aries in Greek mythology. So I was like, that would be so great.
No, I thought that was too on the nose.
I did not. Right. I was like,
I thought I was way too bamboozled,
and I was mad that I was bamboozled. And then I was mad that after I was bamboozled and figured it out, he got his head in a box.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that one I didn't see coming.
I was so upset by that.
I knew it wasn't a mask in the box, but I didn't know what it was. And boy, was I surprised.
I didn't expect it to be Fitchner, but I did expect him to be Aries. I didn't expect Severo to be half gold, half red.
No, that part I was like, what? But that explains a lot, but also seemed like an easy out, because like, I thought Severo was the one good gold, and you find out he's the one good gold because he's two different things.
But he doesn't know.
He knew that. So I guess he's still the one good gold, but.
Yeah. And to be fair, he is technically still a gold through and through, because his mom got biologically changed to.
Which I don't get, because they're like, he's still smaller than everyone else, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I mean,
his mom was his dad. His dad was also small and ugly.
Yes, that's true. And ugly.
Sorry.
I mean, he was described as ugly, yes.
He was described, yeah. So I do. Actually, let's get back to it. We should go back to our questions.
Sorry, we got really part of that. A lot of that was my fault.
No.
It was.
But discussing the moral implications of Darrow as a character is the whole. Here, I'll bring it back. We were talking about if we like the first or the second book, you know, the same or better or whatever. And it's because Darrow is more complex, but less complex at the same time.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's becoming what he needs to become, and that's scary for everyone,
including himself.
Yeah.
He's kind of like, well, I have to set aside my humanity to accomplish this goal, and it sucks.
Yeah. I did like how the resistance played into this book, with the Sons of Aries being led by Harmony versus Dancer, because I think it shows how methodical Aries and Dancer were about, like, no, we have to attack them, not just in violence and in bloodshed. We need to find ways to dismantle the system, not just blow it up. And I thought that was very interesting, because Harmony.
Well, an accurate depiction that there are people in every movement who are in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Something like you see in Spark the Everflame in that resistance.
Yeah. I will say So Harmony, I think, is a bad egg. I don't think Evie's a bad egg. I think she is a woman who has been sexually assaulted her entire life and was raised to be sexually assaulted her entire life and in immense amount of pain. So where violence begets violence, if you only experience sexual violence your whole life, why wouldn't you become a very violent person and would want to blow up and kill all of your oppressors? So I do think when Darrow is like scolding her about morals and stuff like that, it's just like, you don't understand her. She can't think of anything moral because morals have never been given to her.
He doesn't, but he wants more for her.
Yeah.
This is the part where the book kind of lost me. Like, two women running the resistance now, and all of a sudden it's bad, and they're doing these stupid bullshit moves and are basically terrorists. And I'm like, okay, yeah. So Wonder Man was running it, it's fine. Now that two girls are in charge, it's terrible. All right.
Well, and they were sort of being terrorists.
Well, they were.
No, they were.
I'm just saying that's funny to me that every time you let a woman lead, it goes badly, because they also make an absolute mockery of the female mayor of their society. And portray her as basically dumb, even though there's no way that could even be possible. Then this is the part where the book genuinely really lost me, is Darrow scolds Evie about her need for vengeance. He's very moralistically condescending and basically tells her it doesn't matter that she was raped and physically mutilated for years and that she needs to get over it. I'm like, okay, well, being a survivor of sexual violence is totally different than being a survivor of physical violence. So you need to humble yourself and not act like you know everything. And you can talk down to women who have been raped as if you know what that's like. And then he goes on a whole tirade defending Mickey, the person who raped and abused her and raped and abused hundreds and thousands of women for years.
Calling him weird.
I am not going to say that there's not complexity in the fact that Mickey is also a victim of the system. Okay. It's different, though, to defend him and declare him as your friend and tell the victims who he raped for years that, no, he's one of your besties and he's going to be part of the movement and you're going to save him despite the fact that he victimized you for years. I was like, yeah, you've lost me now.
It was giving Mickey a second chance, but not allowing Evie to have a second chance.
And also just being like, rapists are fine and he doesn't deserve to face accountability for any of the shit that he did.
I agree with you. I will also say, though, who in this book who wasn't the top gold wasn't also victimized and shit on, and they were, it just was a trickle down, you know?
I'm saying, I understand there's complexity there.
Yeah.
Like, I agree that Mickey is also a victim here, but he did all that shit to Evie for fun. So I don't think that's the kind of person you should be like, no, you're my friend, when Mickey has never apologized, has not expressed any regret for anything that he's done, has pretty unapologetically fucked these women. And like, okay, you regret what you did. You feel bad for it. You recognize that you were in a system that also abused you. I'm willing to hear you out. But Darrow's like, no, Mickey's my guy. No character development that we can see. Mickey's been an actual victim for the first time in his life, and apparently we're supposed to feel bad for him. I'm just like, no, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
And that's where it lost me.
Yeah, I was mad at that scene for sure. That was one of the scenes where I was like, oh, dear Lord, why are we making this woman seem like the villain? Yeah.
We're trying to get back at someone who raped her repeatedly for years and physically mutilated her.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I agree with her, but like the book.
You understand why she's angry, though.
Right. And the book treated sexual violence like everyone who experienced rape needs to just get over it. Darrow was like, I experienced violence, too. I'm like, I'm sorry. Have you been raped? Do you know what that's like? I think that you need to take yourself down a peg and stop moralizing to women who have been through something you don't understand. Well, so anyway,
the whole Pink's thing is a very hard read. The idea
I think there's more coming from that side too.
Yeah.
Because he does the same thing where he basically tells Mustang that like rape isn't different than other kinds of violence in book one. And I was like, yeah, and for that reason I'm out. Anyway, that's how I felt.
Okay. Let's go back.
We hear you.
Yes. Let's get back into the discussion questions. Specifically, so we've left Mars for the first time in this book. We go to a lot of places, actually. But what did y'all think of Luna and Europa and like space in general? Like, what did you think of the settings and the building up of this gold society?
Okay. I have a plot hole to discuss.
Okay.
Oh.
So, sorry, this is me being a nerd. When they talk about the lords of the gas giants, are they talking about, are the gas giants populated or are they just gas? Or are they talking about the moons? Here's the question that decides whether or not it's a plot hole.
It did sound to me like they were saying that gas giants were populated.
Yeah.
If you blew up Jupiter's moon, it would have screwed everyone on that planet because it would have changed the entire gravity of the planet.
You are correct.
Yeah, that's true. They do. That's true. They never talk about that.
But to be fair, Jupiter got a lot of moons.
Yes.
I was confused on how Jupiter was populated in the first place.
So I'm wondering if when they say that, it's that's why I'm thinking it's maybe just the moons of the gas giants.
Mm-hmm.
That would make more sense.
And they talk about the moons way more than they talk about any of the gas giants.
Isn't Europa Saturn's moon or Jupiter's moon?
I don't know. Either way, it's a gas giant.
Yeah, but it's a moon of one of those. Yeah.
Anyway, so maybe not a plot hole, but if there are people living on Jupiter, blowing up a moon screwed a lot more people than just the people living on the moon.
For sure. There's fallout for that.
I did like visiting Lorne's moon, though. Apparently, yes. You can just have a moon. I don't know.
Europa, yeah.
If you're a Lorne, you do.
So that was a fun little side quest.
I felt bad for Lorne.
God, that was the only one in the end I was kind of sad about. Yeah.
Lorne is the victim of this book.
He just wanted to be a granddad.
He's just playing with his grandchildren at the fountain, and they like gut him head to toe. And I was like, oh my God. And it wasn't even a quick death because the girl couldn't do it. It was a horrible, horrible around his grand. Sorry. I liked the side quest. Interesting that Luna, the Earth's moon, is the center of all society.
Mm-hmm.
And also building all that crap on the moon would mess with Earth's gravity, all those things. And they reference like Italy and stuff. And I'm like, all right, like, but are part of the countries missing at this point? I don't know. They reference other things like North Atlantic Treaty and the women who took it down. And I'm curious about some of the Earth history.
Yeah. And they mentioned that Luna is like super, super tall because they don't have the gravity that is like keeping it from building super high. So thinking about like how the moon and like building many, many, many stories high, it's just like wild.
You've like, nuts. I don't know, you've built a shell around the moon. It has changed the mass of the moon. Yeah. Therefore, it would change the Earth's gravity. Sorry, I'm a nerd.
No, you're good. Yeah. It makes sense.
No, it's kind of a good point that I honestly did not even think about a little bit, is that they're blowing up
you
a lot of stuff.
You love the fifth season?
I know. I should have thought about it. It's because I'm not a space girl, really. The fifth season is down on
Orogenics. Come on.
But I was like, they're blowing up a lot of stuff in space, and most things in space you can't just eliminate without it affecting
I'm also confused. They can do interplanetary travel and it takes a few months or whatever, but they haven't colonized outside of the solar system.
And they still don't know if aliens are real.
Yeah.
I was like, you should know by now.
So the world is bigger, but now it might be just like a little too big for me.
Yeah. I did also find all the different planets and moons a little bit confusing.
I need a solar system map other than, you know, the My Very Eager Mother Just Fed Us 9 Pizzas or whatever.
Right.
There's like, F. What is the F? Just I gave us? No.
My Very Eager Mother just served.
Yeah, served
us. Yeah.
9 Pizzas. Pluto gets planetary status again.
Is Pluto mentioned in this?
Yes, that's where Severa was.
Yeah, you're right. But is that a planetary status or is that just a object status?
Who knows? Justice for Pluto.
Justice for Pluto.
It did get a little confusing to me. And I think I just sort of gave it a pass because I don't understand space and space physics. So I was just kind of like, whatever. But also it seems like some things they can do extremely easy. Like they basically teleport and then some things are really hard and it feels a little inconsistent. I'm like, wait.
Well, it's because they're talking about they don't do it with robots, which was crazy. They're like, watch the out. Good thing scary. We didn't let robots take over the planet. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, a little too close to home with AI.
That was a little bit like he guessed it early that they're like, we're not going to fuck with robots because they'll end up being better than us and take over. And
this
I was
like from 10 years ago.
Yeah. And we're getting to that point slowly but surely.
Yeah. That was a fun. See, some of the world reveals are fun, but some of them I'm like, now I have more questions.
Yes.
And there were times when I was getting a little confused about the physics of the environment that they were in, because sometimes they're on Earth's moon, and sometimes they're on Mars, and sometimes they're on other moons. And I struggle to picture what all of those different places actually looked like. And like, are there trees? And yeah. Are they just walking around?
No, they have terraformed all the planets. There are trees and oceans and...
Right. And I was like, so is everyone...
Poles, equators.
There's rivers. We're all just... Everything's attached to the floor. Like, why do we need grab boots? Do we need grab boots? Like...
They look cool. But
I also kind of chalk that up to listening to the audiobook, because sometimes it's hard to... You can't read back over stuff. So sometimes you miss details like that.
Fair. I want to say, in context of the world too, the smartest person in this book is a woman, and it's not Mustang. It's Darrow's mom when she says, okay, what are you going to do with these billions of people on every planet when you liberate them?
You're yeah.
Right. You're right.
She says, some of us really just want to be miners. Leave, let them do it.
Right.
Leave them alone.
Like, you're going to tell billions of people that there's this whole change and they'll have to come up and integrate with this society on every planet.
Like, you got houses?
No. Yeah. She's like,
right.
I'm like, oh, practical queen.
Yeah.
And it made it seem like she did know. Like, she knew.
Yeah.
I think his dad's going to come into play at some point somehow.
I could see that.
I don't know.
If his uncle knew to do this to him.
His uncle might come into play.
He's dead. Well, yeah, he's not dead. They don't know.
Yeah, his uncle disappeared. I was like, okay, so that's going to become important.
What if Dancer's been his dad this whole time?
Oh, no. Oh, that'd be crazy.
Nero called him his brother in the first book.
Yeah.
He said, say hi to my brother Dancer.
Yeah, it's true. It's unclear if that's just a colloquialism or if it's a... raised like, eyebrows.
It's the rule I have in every fantasy book. Unless you see the body burn, they ain't dead.
And to be fair, we did predict that Io was pregnant.
And that yeah, yes, that you yeah. did. I was like, the plot twist came, I was like, yep.
Caitlin. Yeah, when they Caitlin whispered, I'm a child, I was like, no shit, lady.
Yeah. I was like, Caitlin had this down.
Right.
I wonder why she would say it, though. So the fact that she said it to say, hide the crib, that right. made more sense. I was like, why would you call your sister up to tell her that? Like, yeah, I tell my sister a lot of things, but if I'm dying, who cares, you know?
It did. They made it make sense.
It did.
I don't even remember what we were talking about. This started with some initial question.
Well, it was about the world, and I then switched to his mom talking about
right
the world being... still not big enough for all the people who are living below it.
Right. No, I did appreciate that. I feel like we saw that moment coming as Darrow gets closer and closer to actually coming clean to Mustang, because he does start to think through a little bit his mission, because now he's back with the people who he's actually supposedly fighting for. And I feel like he's thinking for the first time, like, farther ahead and being like, what will happen to them? If they still need mines, people will still need to mine. Like, do all these people want to have their whole world change? Like, probably not all of them, right?
Nope.
And so it's a tough question. Like, that doesn't, I don't think you should leave people in slavery, but also like.
Yeah, I think it's more about fair treatment and not being like trying to.
Right. The ability to come and go and just like the information to know the world is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, then, like
the freedom of it all.
Even if half of them say, yeah, I'm done down here, what do you do with them?
It's too many people. Right.
And what is everyone going to do? Especially when they're not educated. Like, there's so many practical issues to, like, yeah, now we have to deal with this whole population that's trained to do something and have people be able to move, and like, what do you do with a bunch of pinks that don't want to be sex slaves anymore? Like, it's crazy. I did think the conversation with his mom was also really interesting, just from a perspective of like, what do people know? Because his mom totally knows, like, very clearly knows that like there's a surface and everything, and we still don't really know how many Reds are aware of that.
I think Io knew.
I think Eno knew.
Yeah, I think Eno knew too.
And I do love Darrow realizing late in the book that Eno wasn't the saint that he kind of held her in his mind.
Yeah.
Right.
And his mom even saying, I knew she was going to get you in trouble.
Yeah.
Right. So I like that that was shattered a little bit, but
right.
I think she knew more, or else why would she have done that?
Yeah.
Right. It was very deliberate on her part. And so I think we just still have more to discover about the reds and all the other colors in general, because this book, for all it expands, like, we get a lot more of the world of golds in like a planetary sense. We revisit the reds, and so we get a little bit more about the reds, and we're indications that there's more going on there than Darrow knew about. But there's all these other colors that we still have really not interacted with. And it's kind of like, what's going on with them? Like, this is a huge society.
Yeah, they seem to really hate silvers, and we still don't seem to have met any silvers.
Yeah. And there's all these onyxes now. I loved
the obsidians.
The obsidians, that's what I mean.
Yeah. Ragnar.
Ragnar. Oh my God. Love Ragnar.
Love him.
When he takes that sword, I was like, oh, yes.
Yeah. But each of these colors has been conditioned into submission in a different way. And so also when you think about revolution, it's like all of these separate groups of people have different needs and different experiences that mean they will only, like with Ragnar, they are basically conditioned into submission through pain and suffering and learning over time that if you disobey a gold, it will bring immense pain and suffering upon you and your family.
Yeah, they're essentially tricked into believing the golds are Nordic gods.
Yeah.
Yeah, like gods are actual gods. And so
very bizarrely latched onto like the Thor, Odin kind of thing.
That means to liberate them, you have to, it's almost like you need culturally comprehensive messaging for every subgroup of the society, because they've all been given a different lie, a different belief system in order to keep them in submission.
It's very much like the will of the many, where you have to deprogram an entire society. But because that the golds have taken the lessons from every society before them, taken the good, the bad, the ugly, and perfected it to make the perfect society where they are on top and can function well for them. So you would have to go in and literally take apart piece by piece in order to create a new society.
It's what we see in every book like this. Knowledge is power, and they've weaponized the knowledge.
Yep.
I don't know how he's going to do it all in one more book.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He actually this week announced a new book, and it's I think it's called Iron Red or something.
Yeah.
And I guess it's about the period of time when Darrow's training with Lorne.
Hmm. Interesting.
So who knows what all these other books are about? I really do think it's only one more book in the main, like, story.
The main trilogy, yes.
Well, now that it's having this whole second life, there might be more now because publishers will want to pay him for more.
Well, like I said, he just announced a new one, like, right, this week.
Okay. So technically, one of the main plot points of the book, I say technically because it actually feels insignificant in the context of everything that happens in the book. But technically, Darrow is trying to incite a civil war. And
right. He succeeds.
Yeah, he literally why would I assess cut off the head of the snake? Let's start a whole war.
Yeah, let them kill themselves.
Let's have the snakes fight each other. And so he utilizes this feud between the Bellona and the Augustus to get this whole gold society to cannibalize itself, basically. That's his theory. What did you guys think of that?
Oh, okay, he was genius.
When he jumped up on the table, I was like, oh, shit's going down.
And then spilled the wine.
So good. I was like, damn. He's like stomping through plates and then eventually cuts off Cassius's arm. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
I can't wait for whatever the big Cassius Darrow showdown is.
Yeah, because now Cassius knows Darrow has skills and won't underestimate him.
And Darrow's killed almost his entire family. Although Cassius does say, why'd you kill the children? And Darrow's like, question mark? So someone's working on something else too.
I think that has to do
with probably the jackal.
Yeah. The jackal To me, the one of the reasons why I still want to read book three is because I have to know what the Jackal's doing. Yeah. Like, honestly, at this point,
shot his dad in the head.
Yes. And the Jackal has had some whole plan, which we knew about this whole time. We knew Darrow should not have worked with him. And Mustang tries to stop him, but he doesn't do
it. Everybody does.
Everyone tries to stop him and he doesn't do it. But I think, honestly, I wish Darrow had just killed Cassius, because Cassius to me is now insignificant in terms of big bads.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
he's got to come back somehow bigger in the end.
Right. Like, to make it a worthwhile battle, ultimately, he has to up his game now, because the person this is really about is the Jackal. Like, the Jackal has orchestrated this whole group mm-hmm. against Darrow, or at least that's what it kind of seems like.
How do you think the Jackal found out about him being red?
When he shot at the people and missed in his study?
The media networks.
Mm.
I think the Jackal just has access to cameras everywhere.
Well, he also said he revealed it to him when he was... It was when they staged the escape of Dancer and all them. And I think it's... He shot at a bunch of them and purposely missed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they probably... That was the red flag that made him dig.
Mm.
Dig deeper. And also, the Jackal just is not dumb enough, I don't think, to right. just have people around him where he doesn't understand their whole backstory. And he wants dirt on everyone he knows. He wants to be able to blackmail everyone he knows and have a card up his sleeve. There wouldn't have
been dirt on the Andromeda's family.
Right. And so he went looking for more stuff because he wants to know everything he can about his allies, because that's the kind of manipulator he is. And we all know Darrow's backstory would not have stood up to incredible scrutiny.
Well, because he didn't know his name.
It was only a matter of time. It was only a matter of time. Like, the Jackal had the resources and the will to figure out that it was a sham, and he did.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
Yes. I knew the Jackal was coming at some point. I didn't know he would do what he did, but I knew.
Jackal and Rogue, I was just waiting. Like, the whole book is almost unbelievable tension, just waiting for them.
When he's like, Rogue now has 30% of this fleet. I was like,
oh, well, fuck, he's going to go against you.
Yeah.
I knew as soon, I knew Rogue, from the beginning of the book, I knew Rogue was going to betray him, and I knew Rogue was not going to accept him for being red.
I also knew that he would need to tell Mustang eventually, and she would have a hard time digesting it. I don't think she's fled him, not by any means, especially now that her dad's dead.
Yeah,
her dad is who she kind of wanted to keep alive, but now he's dead. So
she has no reason off. To stay loyal to her family now, because it's Jackal who she loved and trusted.
So her dad dying, I actually thought was a little bit of a cop out.
It was
reason, because we all knew, you know, Mustang has issues with the Jackal. She's not going to betray Darrow for the Jackal. Her dad was the reason that she was having such a hard time. You just killed off the reason she was having a hard time. So. Yeah. That's you just made her decision easy, basically.
Unless she ends up being the villain the whole time, either way.
Well, to be fair,
turns out the hero or the villain. I think she's the boss of all these books.
To be fair, he only has one book left to put this all together, so it kind of makes sense to kill him off.
Yeah, and that's what we kind of start talking about. It was interesting when he realized that killing Augustus was not going to help him. He needed Augustus to climb, so he had to play nice and go with all this and accept the pure evil to get where he needed to go. And then the plan that, like, he would end up deposing him and becoming the ruler, the overall ruler, that was crazy. You knew that was not going to happen. So now I don't know where it's going, but I know it's not that.
That's why I'm, like, so interested in the third book, because... Now the jig is up. Like, now this is about getting the lower colors involved.
He's either going to die, which won't happen because, you know, he has to live because he's the main character, or he's being sent to a
prison. People say these series have made them cry their eyes out. I don't think it's out of the question.
But, like, he can't die before the end of the third book.
Right. But he has to die.
In Divergent, she dies. Sorry, spoiler.
But before the end of the third book. Like, we haven't even started the third book. So he has to be sent somewhere.
Right. Not before I think it's possible he dies in the third book and continues on with someone else.
Totally agree. I just think, like, where is he going now? Because now the jig is up. People know he's a Red. That's treason.
I think he's a, yeah, I think we're going to get to, he's incited enough turmoil in the lower classes that people will still follow him for a totally different reason.
Sure, but he is, like, literally debilitated right now. So he's going to go to a prison camp or, like.
Probably.
Yeah.
And Mustang will break him out and Severo.
Yeah.
The real heroes. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, okay, let's talk about the ending. We've kind of talked around everything else. We are left that Fitchner's head is in a box. Augustus is dead. Lauren is dead. Victor's bleeding out. Mustang is missing. Severo is off planet looking for his dad, but he's dead. Mm-hmm. And Darrow is hurt and captured. And Octavia Loon has triumphed over him with the help of the Jackal. She's the next one to die. I guarantee it. Jackal's
the Jackal's killing him immediately.
Yeah.
That was just like the last 10 pages, too.
Not even last 10 pages, like the last two.
And so that was crazy. The
Trojan horse ending is this huge battle where.
And I knew there was, it was too quiet, too tidy. Yeah. Also, he never did make Darrow his heir.
No.
He never got around to it.
Nope.
So what do we think is going to happen?
Well, the Jackal's his heir now.
Yeah.
So he will be the heir.
Or Mustang. Now is it the Battle of the Twins?
Well, I think the society is obviously very sexist. So I think they're just
going to. So let's not remember. They're all 22.
They're all 22. But the society is very sexist. And it seems like they're not going to be willing to give it to Mustang. So they're going to give it immediately to the Jackal.
Maybe. We'll see. He is the cannibal kid, so people don't like that.
Right. Also, Mustang and Octavia Alloon have their own thing happening.
There's some
beef. Yeah, because Mustang's been working her connections. She's got to have something good, because
Mustang was scheming long before Darrow resurfaced. That's why Cassius, all of this.
It was actually frustrating. I was like, get out of her middle game, okay? Let her work.
Yeah, you're interrupting her game.
Yeah.
Take your toy guns and leave, buddy. Let her use the brain and get it done.
But you're sleeping with the enemy, and she's just like, yeah, and?
Yeah, idiot.
Doing it on purpose for you.
Yeah. Right. No, I think it's a good ending. I think it's a good ending because you can't even really imagine what's going to happen. I mean, we basically just described it. Like, we know somehow Mustang and Severo are going to rescue Darrow. But we have no idea how that's going to happen. We don't know how he's going to build an army out of the other colors. Like, somehow to revolution, finish the revolution, he's got a long way to go. So
he is quite literally back to square one.
Yeah.
Because he is now officially been outed as a Red in a Gold's body.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I have a feeling he'll be sent somewhere very, very far away. In like a prison camp or something like that.
Pluto.
I think so the funny Jackal is going to keep him real close.
That's a good shout.
Yeah.
Ooh, so interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be
sitting there on my lippy, but I have to start into our next book and then spooky season first.
Yeah, Catabasis.
Spoiler, guys, Catabasis is next. If you listen to this whole episode, here's your reward.
Yeah. So much in this book. All right. Well, do you guys have book recommendations? I think we're at the end.
The Will of the Many.
It's a good one. It's probably all of our same ones from Red Rising.
Yeah.
I'm pulling them up. What do you say? I'm going to tell you if they were the same. That's not what.
Because I think I'm going to do fifth season.
Okay. Casey's was the same. Catherine's was not.
I say
Catherine said Project Hail Mary.
That's good, yeah.
If you want a space opera that's more funny, the book I've been loving, I've done two of them now, Dungeon Crawler Carl. It's also about sort of eventually overthrowing the powers of the universe in the organization of things, just differently and much more funny, and it reads. It's like an I think the category, which is new to me because I'm not typically this nerdy, is it's a lit RPG. So like a literature.
Like a role-playing game?
Yeah, it's kind of based. It's video game based, sort of.
Okay.
There's like levels of the dungeon he has to get through. And there's like monsters he has to fight, etc.
Okay.
Anyway, it's really funny. It's way more lighthearted.
Yeah.
But it's also gross.
Lighthearted and gross. Sounds perfect.
Well, there's like monsters and things. So
that's what you'll need after this book.
But it's he's not killing like other humans, so.
Yeah. I finished this book and I was like, I need to wash my eyes out with a rom-com.
That's what I did. I'm reading a cowboy rom-com.
Okay, yeah. Everybody name the rom-com you're reading.
It's well, Lost and Lassoed or something.
I'm reading The Dark Lord's Guide to Dating.
Which I actually was like, you better tell us if that's good, because low-key intriguing title.
So far funny, kind of assistant to the villain, but steamier.
Okay.
Marriage of Convenience, though. Take it as you will.
Oh. But
convenient for both parties.
There we go. Actually looking at my Goodreads, I think the rom-com I read was Everything is Tuberculosis. So
that is not a rom-com.
No. I think I watched something on Netflix though. I don't think I read something.
That's fair.
Anyway, this is just our opinions. We've always got a lot of them. We hope you enjoyed listening to some of them. And let us know what you want us to read next. You can send us your own thoughts, your own recommendations at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. We're most active on Instagram, and we also get submissions to forms on our website. So yeah, rate and review our podcast.
We read them all, guys. Everything you send us.
Yeah. We've gotten several really nice ones recently. So if you've sent any in, thank you. We really appreciate it.
And thank you for filling out the spooky season poll. That was interesting.
Yeah, we never heard of most of those.
We are investigating.
Mm-hmm.
We are.
All right. Well, that's it. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.